Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And good afternoon, Tuesday edition of the Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. You can find us at stevejonesshow.com. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Twitter handle at Steve Jones PSU, and subscribe to our podcast. We drop it to your smartphone and tablet after the show is air live on WKOK. You can go to either Google Play, iTunes, or your Apple Podcast app, search Steve Jones Show, hit subscribe, and listen to us anytime, anywhere. And you can always go back in time. We've got 3 months of shows always archived at stevejonesshow.com. You can also drop us a line anytime. Our email is stevejones@wkok.com. And Steve will be in the Sunbury Motors studio in just a moment. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. So we'll be with you live till 5. Then we'll have our late day news roundup at 5:06. Penn State Coaches Show with Steve tonight and head coach Patrick Chambers. They'll be on at 6:06. And don't forget, every weeknight, all this week on WKOK, we have our countdown to Super Bowl 53. Tonight at 10 will be 5 days to Sunday with Westwood One. Our complete coverage of Super Bowl 53 will start Sunday at 2 from Atlanta, kickoff at 6:30 between the Rams and the Patriots. We'll have some Super Bowl talk coming up later in the show from NFL Wire Network senior editor Neil Coulong. He'll be joining us. Get some Penn State football recruiting talk as well. Ryan Snyder, Blue White Illustrated, will be with us as well. And Bob Buhner checking in with us, too, making his way into our broadcast facility of champions. Always good to see you, sir.
Thank you, Sean. Nothing but sunshine, rainbow, and lollipops all over the central Susquehanna Valley.
I'll take that.
Just beautiful, beautiful afternoon here. I will be watching the Super Bowl, Sean, from the sunny confines of New Zealand. It comes on live Monday at 12:30 p.m.
I'll be in the ice box in Chicago.
Oh boy, Steve! Good luck with that.
Glad you had a chance to visit us one more time, Bob, before you went out on your trip.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to go see cricket. New Zealand.
You can explain the rules to me then.
I'll bring back a detailed analysis of the New Zealand versus Bangladesh match that I'm going to actually see live and in person.
That's going to be hot and heavy.
Yeah.
terrific. And really, don't be insulted if it takes me a while to get to looking at the rules.
Exactly.
It's just all about time. Do I have that kind of time to do it?
You haven't lived until you've heard the cricket rules, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, you know what? Run it past the suit first, then.
Steve, I want to tell you and Sean and our listeners about something very funny last night. I was on the CBS Sports Network at midnight watching the international championship of men's team handball between Denmark and Norway. Now, here's what's amusing. Denmark is ahead, and all of a sudden, the Denmark fans, about 15,000, start into Zombie Nation, which is, made famous at Penn State University, during football. But it has gotten a worldwide attention, and the fans from Denmark are carrying on doing the Zombie Nation thing. And then when they got ahead of Norway, it was na-na, hey-hey, goodbye from steam. The point of that is that American influence in sports does cast a worldwide net, and things that we know that our audiences do, like those kinds of chants, all of a sudden they're being picked up around the world.
Our fans are fun.
Yeah. No question.
I mean, that's the bottom line is American fans are fun. I mean, they always have been. Now, sometimes they get a little bit out of control. Sometimes they cross a line. But that's when you get any great number of individuals together. That possibility does exist.
But you know what's fascinating about American fans is we have never seen anywhere in the U.S. the hooliganism that was rampant in European soccer for decades. None of that has ever happened here. You know, the Super Bowl's over. People go back to what they're doing and get ready for, and it's same in college football or any kind of professional sport. There's nothing like that which occurred in Europe for decades. We're just happy. Yeah. We're happy fans.
Yeah, we really, really are for the most part, yes. And for the most part.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you have an incident or here or there. I think in the Kansas City game, didn't some nut run on the field?
Yeah, you're not allowed to see that anymore on TV, apparently. So, you know, they were doing shots of the scoreboard and the fans and all that. But, yeah, there was some miscreant out there wrecking a little bit of sideline havoc.
I made it on the field. And actually, you've made it to a jail cell. Congratulations.
Yeah. Steve, when I was in college, I went up to Cleveland to see a Browns game, the Browns playing the Bears.
I'm sorry.
And yeah, it was a worthless bowl is what they called it. But anyway, some fan, that was when streaking was very big, streaked across the field. He made a mistake. He veered toward the Bears' defensive huddle.
Oh, no.
And, yes, Dick Butkus clotheslined the guy, laid him out. They literally took the guy off naked on a stretcher.
What was it several years ago at a Steelers-Browns game in Cleveland? Someone ran out onto the field, and didn't James Harrison just pile drive him into the ground?
Yep. And that was the last that guy was heard from.
Right. Mike Curtis of the Colts did that?
Yeah.
Mike Curtis of the Colts did that to a guy, came up, wham, leveled him, clotheslined him, something like that.
Yep. Yep. So that was I was able to see sit in the stadium affectionately known as the Mistake by the Lake and watch Dick Butkus do his job.
On a streaker.
Yes, on a streaker. Back when that was a very popular form of entertainment.
Long before the dog pound in Cleveland.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I mean, do you really want to run out there and show everybody your shortcomings?
Yeah.
All right, so.
Yeah, anyway.
we're going to talk recruiting today, as we have Ryan Snyder on the show today.
That would be great.
Neil Coulong will join us on the show today. Bob Buhner's on the show today. Sean Carey's on the show today. Is there anybody else? Like anybody at the staff meeting that wanted to be on?
Well, there was one guy in a suit that kept raising his hand, but
I hope the words, no, we're good, were used.
We've got that covered.
He's up to page 6 in the Super Bowl 53 William Hill prop bets. We'll tackle those more on Friday.
Yes.
We're going to tackle that on Friday. And it's interesting with CBS. CBS is being criticized in many fronts. How long is the pregame show? Is it 4 hours, 5 hours? How long is it?
4.5, I think.
I don't know if the air. I'll double check my TV guide. I thought like the very
it's
first.
Probably, it's
show
probably
started like 11:30 or something.
Yeah, but I think over the air CBS is 2 to 6.
Yeah, I think 2 to 6, and
that sound right.
Then they go
okay,
six
so it's
to
6:30. They're being criticized because they're not doing anything about that involves betting on the pregame show at all, and I. You know, let's face it, Nevada, Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Mississippi, New Mexico already have sportsbook active. I think New York's on the path to getting there, and so are a few others. But they're being criticized by saying they're not doing anything about it. Brent Musburger, of course, who has the Vegas Information and Sports Network.
Yep.
It was critical of it as well. Now, this is what I think CBS should have done. And that, it's not just as appeasement. It's just being realistic. Do what we're going to do on Friday. Do the prop bet thing and have fun with it. Hey, have fun with it. How long do you think the national anthem will be? Ah, it's over under. I'll take the under. And just have them have fun with it. That doesn't mean they have to exchange money or anything like that. You know, Tom Brady will be the MVP, yes or no? Jared Goff will be the MVP, yes or no? Bill Belichick during the game will text Sean McVay, yes or no? It was one of the dumbest. That was one of the dumbest things from last night. They kept getting asked over and over and over again about the text messages that Belichick sent in support of Sean McVay. He got asked over and over and over again. It is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. It's not a big story. It's no big deal. All right? Coaches, head coaches text each other all the time. Do you want to know why? Because they're only, in a world of 7 billion people, there are only 32 of them in the world. College football only has 65 of them at the Power 5 level. Okay? Those are the only people that are currently employed that can relate to what you're going through.
Well, they're true peers, and that's in the sense of the word.
They're the only people that can relate to what you're going through. And that's something that I don't think a lot of people realize. Yeah, they'll text each other back and forth because guess what? They're the only ones living a parallel life to you at that moment. So, of course, they text each other. It happens all the time. Or they talk to each other on the phone. Do you know me? Patrick Chambers, he'll tell me, yeah, Tim Izzo called me yesterday. You know, we talked for a while. I talked a little bit the other day to Chris Holtman over at Ohio State. James Franklin and Joe Moorhead will talk sometimes. Why? Joe Moorhead's a head coach of Mississippi State. So they talk sometimes. Guess what? They can relate to the similar problems, things that they didn't realize when they were assistant coaches that they now know as head coaches.
And, you know, some people read into that, Steve, something nefarious. Oh, my goodness. James Franklin talked to the head coach of Podunk University as if that's some mystery. Gee, no, people talk all the time.
It happens all the time. They text each other all the time. And the reason is that they can relate to the problems they go through. You know, whether it's dealing with an issue, dealing with a parent, something good, something whatever.
Something funny.
That doesn't happen very much often. You won't believe what happened here today.
Exactly right.
That's more of what it is. They can relate to it. They're not gonna, it's you know, gee, I think I'll talk to my neighbor about it. And the neighbor's like sitting there going, oh, yeah, really? Oh, yeah. That's really bad. I mean, that's why they talk all the time. So everybody acts like it's some novel thing. It's always interesting when I hear things that are considered to be like, wow, can you believe this? And I sit there and go, yeah, what about it? It's common. Happens all the time.
Well Steve.
I'll give you a good one. I'll give you a really good one. Remember when Penn State first got hit by sanctions, Bill O'Brien's the coach, and they're talking about how much hitting with a limited staff you're going to, you know, with a limited numbers that you're going to do. And he talked about, well, we're going to run a lot more thud and things like that. The number of people that took off on that and said, thud, we're not hitting. Oh, thud, right? Like it was some brand new thing that was invented that week. When, for decades, Joe Paterno ran thud. Okay? In fact, it was always, we always kind of got a couple laughs out of it, would be when the first time in the preseason when Joe would gather the team up and he explained to them, or sometimes demonstrate to them, what he meant by thud. Okay? And I'm sitting there, and I think, yeah, there's this thud thing. I go, what about it? And people act like, well, how can you blow this off? But I don't know, because I watched it for 20 years? But I don't know. It's not new. I mean, they acted like coaches texting was new, that Belichick texting somebody was new. It's not new. Go to the next thing, because that's commonplace.
Yeah, what a revelation.
Yeah. Oh,
Well, Steve, do you talk to your peers in sports broadcasting?
Oh, of course I do. All the time.
Exactly.
All the time. In fact, of my peers, the last guy I got in touch with was the end of last week, Matt Shepard. Matt got the Detroit Tigers full-time job, and I wanted to make sure about that. Plus, I don't think a lot of people realize Matt's wife had a car accident.
Ooh.
So I wanted to check in and see how she was doing. But, you know, Paul Keels, Don Fisher, Johnny Holiday. Johnny's about as good a friend as you could ask. Same thing with Paul. You know, Matt LePay, Gary Dolphin. Gary Dolphin and I have texted several times during the course of this. We text all the time because, again, we're all doing the same job, just at different places. So, I mean, Gary went through something at Iowa back in December. And, you know, I got in touch with him on a couple of things. I wanted to make sure how he was doing, how he was hanging in there and so forth. You know, because I know what happened with him, and I also can relate because in doing the same job, you know, you can relate.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll take a break. Sean, same thing. I mean, it's always tough when you got one guy on the staff, for example. Like, for example, you tell him, I'm going to have surgery, and he says, well, I've had surgery. Yeah, it's just the guy. I mean, you worry about those guys. I mean,
that's
they just
do.
You know, yeah, I know it's our guy. You know?
Leave it at that.
Yeah, he's an amazing dude. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Neil Coulong, next half hour, we'll get into the not only the Super Bowl, but we're also going to get into the Hall of Fame. They are going to announce the five, plus there'll be a couple of others, by the way, along the way that will be a part of the Hall of Fame group, but they have to pick five.
Here's hoping for Alan Faneca of the Steelers to be one of that five.
Yeah, Faneca is certainly going to be somebody that will get a lot of recognition for this. There's no question he will. He is... I think right now, Ed Reed would be, and Tony Gonzalez would be two of the, quote, maybe locks to get in.
Not bad.
After that, I think of the guys that have been, that have not quite made it before, probably Tony Boselli. And to me, that only leaves two more spots.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right, let's get to it. Let's bring in Neil Coulong, USA Today. Neil, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, it's good to be here as always. Thanks for having me.
The last time Bill Belichick texted you, was it really friendly?
It always is. It's a maximum of four words long and usually has something to do with get away and some type of profanity.
Usually the one I get says leave me alone. I mean, it's three words. It's to the point. I watched the Super Bowl night. I don't know what do they call. Who knows what they call? I don't care. I could care less. Media day. And I watched Sean McVay, and he was asked a dozen questions about Bill Belichick texting him. Okay, great. Thank you very much for wasting my time. And I couldn't believe it. Is this where we are now, Neil?
I think the best part of it is, and we see this a lot in the media, and I'll rip us for it. We oftentimes think something is much more like grandiose than it really is. Coaches text each other all the time. Players text each other all the time. They just don't talk about it. And just because you came up with the big question because you heard at one point that these two talk to each other doesn't mean it's some gigantic story. People might respond to it with a little bit of a snicker, but that's like a headline-only story. There's not really much to dig into. They happen to chat. I mean, Belichick does it all the time. You think he and Matt Patricia never talk?
He and Bill O'Brien?
It's not rare behavior, I guess I'm saying.
Well, you know what? You want to know why it's not rare behavior? Because guess what? There are very few people in the world that have that seat that can relate to what you're going through. I mean,
I agree with that 1,000%.
That's what it is. What it is that there's only 32 of you, or in college football, there's 65 of you, right, that can actually sit there and relate to exactly what you're going through because they're in the exact same seat you are. I think that's why they communicate with each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fraternity, and there are two reasons for that. One, I think there is, with Belichick in particular, I get the gruff exterior and how much he really kind of hates divulging publicly anyway who he is, what he does, and everything like that. He may hate the media. It doesn't mean that he hates other coaches. Anyone that you talk to within the coaching ranks will talk about having come across Bill Belichick at one point, and he's helpful. He's a resource of information, mostly just because I think that's just kind of his altruistic gesture. At this point in his career, I mean, nobody can hold a resume up against him anyway. It's not as if McVay chatting him up during the season is going to put the Patriots to a strategic disadvantage in that happenstance they play for the Super Bowl. It's just more Belichick being a 70-year-old guy helping out a 33-year-old coach who's obviously done a great job to this point in his career, and that coach being eager enough and having the confidence enough to seek a guy like Belichick out. He's going to give him, a few pearls of wisdom here and there. It only helps the sport. It only helps each other. And you can learn as much from teaching as you can from learning, in my opinion. I think that's a big part of why he does it.
Plus, here's the other part. Belichick, to his credit, really loves history. And I think one of the reasons he loves history is that I think he's smart enough to know that he can learn from it. And he likes passing that along to younger coaches.
Yeah, and well, why wouldn't you? I mean, that's kind of the root of teaching is history in a lot of ways. And
yes.
I definitely think he's that old school guy. I mean, it's to the point where, for me anyway, when I think of Belichick in that teaching mold, who I think of is Bobby Knight. If you take away the physical altercations of Bobby Knight, put it back into a more aggressive coaching era when he was there, it's about teaching. Mm-hmm. And I think Belichick has always hung on to that. His dad was the same way. Bob Knight's a military historian, coming up through the Army. Belichick right. has that same background. You can see where that comes from. And I agree with you. And any natural teacher is going to want to teach somebody who's willing to learn. And I think that's if you can say anything about McVay at this point in his career, that would be it.
How do you view Sunday?
I've looked at this a lot more since the last time we talked, and it's only strengthened my belief. I see many ways in which the Patriots win this game handily. I do not see many ways the Rams win at all. What's interesting to me with the Patriots, and this isn't making an excuse, it's not trying to take away anything from their accomplishments, but the big argument has been everybody in the media who wrote the Patriots off, who said they weren't going to be any good, this and that and the other thing. I don't think that was necessarily an unfair take if you watched the way the Patriots played against the Steelers in week 15 or whatever that was.
Right.
The Patriots haven't lost since then. And in the against the good teams that they've played, they've had a pretty substantial matchup advantage. Not a talent advantage, a matchup advantage.
Right.
I don't think, if you look at the playoff field, look at the 11 other teams the Patriots at some level might play in the playoffs, I don't think you could have picked a better three than the Chargers, with the exception maybe of the Ravens in that game. Maybe.
Right.
Maybe. Chargers, Chiefs, and Rams. And it has nothing to do with the talent level of those teams. They're teams that just can't match up with what the Patriots do well. And frankly, there's not a whole lot that they do well, but what they do well, they do it at a very high level. And we saw that against Kansas City. We certainly saw that against San Diego. And I think against Los Angeles, we're going to see that against the Rams as well.
And part of that matchup is that when I look at the secondary of the Patriots, and I look at, you know, and I look at the, it's not a matchup deal, but it's a comparison deal. I look at the secondary of the Patriots and the secondary of the Rams, and I see two dramatically different teams.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that, largely in the sense that the guy throwing the ball at those secondaries, there's a stark advantage there. And
yes,
the simplest way to put this is Tom Brady is just dramatically better than Jared Goff. Jared
yes.
Goff plateaued in like week 11.
Yeah.
He hasn't played particularly well in a while.
He has not played well since he hasn't played well since the game against the Chiefs.
Yeah. Yeah, and the bottom pretty much fell out for him in many ways, what we saw of the Rams' offense. And a big part of that was teams were adjusting to the 11 personnel that they would play. They were able to run out of that package. It didn't work after a while. They had to go heavy. The Rams have been playing heavy football for a while
now. Yes, they have.
And it's to the point where Belichick sees everything that they're doing. He's gotten everything on film that he's going to need to get. The Patriots, on the other hand, are the team that had to really reinvent themselves in a more positive way. The Rams reinvented themselves over the second half of the year, and they declined. The Patriots, really because of Josh Gordon. And you want to go back to the root of that. The reason they had to acquire Gordon is they had no vertical threat
That's right.
on the field. And don't tell me Chris Hogan is a good vertical threat, because he's not. He has to be set up
hey,
for everything that he
hey,
does.
Hey, Penn State lacrosse guy. Hey.
Yep, I know. Yeah. I'm waiting for it. And it's, you know, he does a great job for what they're paying him to do.
Yeah.
They're only asking him to make a play a game, maybe. They needed to bring in Gordon and bring him along during the regular season so they had some variety come the playoffs. As it turns out, Gordon isn't there. And they haven't needed him because they
right.
play teams that can't defend the flats and can't stop the run. And against the Chiefs, really the Chiefs' defense, by the time they finally adjusted, and keep in mind this is a defense run by a guy that probably was fired before the Cups were taken all out of Arrowhead Stadium after the game. By the time they finally adjusted to what the Patriots were doing, basically Belichick and McDaniel said, okay, well, it's time for Tom to be Tom. And he just threw the ball short, let them make plays down the field with a couple bigger, you know, big gains over the top. That's the type of offense that they can run, but he didn't get that lead initially. If they didn't, you know, build some gap between them, they knew Mahomes was eventually going to Mahomes and take over the game like he did. And the fact that they got that to overtime against a team that, you know, for the most part, in pretty much every position, the Chiefs have an advantage over the Patriots. The Rams don't have that kind of talent. They're good, but they're not the level the Chiefs are, and it's mostly because they don't have the passing game. I don't think the Patriots are even going to need to get a running start the way that they did against the Chiefs. All they're really going to need to do is possess the ball and eventually stretch them out wide enough that their defensive line can't matter. And as we talked about last week, find Marcus Peters on the field. From there, you're really not going to have a problem.
Zero in on him, and believe me, it would be like going down Interstate 80 on a clear day. You should be fine. You should be fine. And again, I think when you're a young quarterback, you have a tendency to lean on a certain guy that becomes really dependable for you. When Carson Wentz first got to Philadelphia, Matthews was that guy. I think the guy for Goff was Cooper Kupp. And I think when he lost the security blanket, I think that's when you started to see the game make a turn downward for him again.
I would even say this. They lost Kupp early enough
yeah.
that they had to change a lot of things on the fly. By the time that caught up to him, is really when Goff kind of fell off. So it's more like the lingering wound of Kupp not being in there.
Right.
It's hurting him now more than it did early in the season, I guess I'm saying. With that, too, it's an unfortunate injury, but you're exactly right. They drafted Kupp to be that guy.
Yes.
And he certainly was early in his career. He's going to be a good young receiver. For what they have offensively, there's enough firepower there that you think that they would make it all work. But by the time I don't want to say the scheme fails or anything like that, but by the time, you know, they weren't dropping six touchdowns on six possessions against people, teams have caught up to them, and they don't have the freakish ability on the outside with a quarterback that is aggressive enough to hit those throws. They don't have that enough to maintain things on their own. In other words, Patrick Mahomes can make things happen on his own. Jared Goff can't. I think Brandon Cooks is a good receiver, an underrated player.
Yes.
They have a good offense, a great offensive line.
Yep.
But Goff just doesn't make the killer kinds of reads and throws down the field to make a defense fear him enough to get out of the box. Is it an accident that Todd Gurley is just playing horrible football lately? He's not helping himself.
No.
But they're not going to be able to run the ball against the Patriots. That's all the Patriots are going to do. They're going to sit in the box all day and say, look, you got single high man on the outside, Goff. Are you going to beat us down the field? I highly doubt it. You're not even Nick Foles. You can't even do that. The more I look at it, the more I see how one-sided this really is. Super Bowls aren't blowouts, so I would say Patriots are going to win by 7 to 10, okay, somewhere in there. And I don't think it'll be all that competitive.
All right, the Hall of Fame is going to be announced this weekend. Obviously, there will be five plus a couple of other people that will get in. So let's just have a little fun here. Get a thumbs up or thumbs down from you on somebody. The one senior finalist.
I remember doing this last year. I was sweating in the middle of it, trying to count which ones I had picked and which ones I didn't. This is tough. It's really hard.
Now let's get to one that's easy. The senior finalist is Johnny Robinson, the old safety for the Chiefs. Thumbs up. Thumbs down.
I would say thumbs down just because I think they're going to feel they've put in enough senior candidates lately. I think this would be a year that they need to get to the regular guys just because there's enough of a backlog right now. I think they're going to want to use the spot to justify keeping another guy in the regular group.
I'll go thumbs up. I thought he was a terrific player. So Pat Bowlen and Gil Brand as contributors.
Oh, the contributors. That drives me nuts. I don't see any particular reason right now why you put Pat Bowlen in. It doesn't mean that he doesn't belong there, but why now? Does he need to get in right now?
Right.
I don't see a pressing reason for him or Gil Brandt, for that matter. I think Gil Brandt's probably helped his cause over the years more than anything by the activity that he has.
On Sirius XM, he's helped himself tremendously.
Oh, yeah. He enjoys himself some candidacy. I know that.
Ed Reed.
Ed Reed's in.
Yeah. Jack Ham would be the first one to throw a thumbs up on that one. He and I have been big Ed Reed guys. So the first time we actually saw him here in Beaver Stadium, we're like, this guy can play.
The first ballot Hall of Fame safety, in my opinion, it's him.
Yeah, no doubt. Tony Gonzalez.
I can, well... how do we define him? How do we define him? If we want to call him a tight end, absolutely. But
Gonzalez,
he probably, I'll go guess, first ballot Hall of Fame player. But if we're talking a receiver, I'm not, just because of the standard of what a first ballot receiver is not Tony Gonzalez. But as a tight end,
Kevin Mawai.
Oh, that's tough. That's tough. There are so many good interior offensive linemen. All of them had to wait. And I hate using the wait as a standard for something.
Right.
I don't think he's been separated from the game long enough to really have felt his impact. Certainly not in comparison to what we're going to establish as the center position in the future. I would say no to Mawai.
Champ Bailey.
Is this Champ's first ballot?
Yes, it is.
I
never really warmed up to him watching him as a player, but you know what? I thought, he's good. He should get in. But I was never really like, oh, that's Herb Adderley. No, it's not.
I think Champ Bailey is probably a step above a guy like Ty Law for that era.
Well,
like,
Ty Law's on here, too.
Probably the best all around. Yeah. It's going to be a no for Law as well. I don't think he quite makes the cut overall. Bailey belongs in the Hall of Fame. I'm not going to put him first ballot opposite Ed Reed, though. That doesn't seem right.
Well, Ed Reed, Champ Bailey, yeah. I mean, even though they're different spots, it was significant. I mean, Reed was unbelievably good.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The definition of what a first ballot guy is, Randy Moss, Jerry Rice, those are first ballot Hall of Famers in this era. That's not quite Champ Bailey.
Alan Faneca.
Big nasty. I didn't see a better guard. I didn't see a more versatile offensive lineman in my time. I'd put him in there. I think he should get in eventually, but he's going to be the kind of guy that ends up having to wait just because other guys need to get in.
Tony Boselli, he's waited.
I don't understand why he isn't in before.
I know.
Really don't. If you're going to put Terrell Davis in the Hall of Fame, Tony Boselli should have been in 3 years before.
Exactly.
Boselli easily would have been Anthony Munoz, Jonathan Ogden. He's easily one of the best tackles ever to play. He just got hurt. Yeah. You know, and I think everybody knows that. I don't think anybody would deny him that opportunity. But I think he should be in just because that guy owned that era. He was so good.
All right, let me do two more, and then I'll let you go. Isaac Bruce.
Oh, Isaac the Bruce. Mm. He creates a really interesting dynamic.
Yes, he does.
What worries me about him is just because he's almost like at the top of that pool of receivers that started to just blow up in that era of the sport, and they really started getting more vertical down the field.
Right.
A guy like Jimmy Smith, for example, you put his numbers against most of the receivers in the Hall of Fame, and he's way above them.
Yeah, from Jacksonville,
Jimmy Smith in the Hall of Fame.
Yep. Exactly.
So I think Bruce belongs in there. I would put him in there. I'm fine with that.
John Lynch.
I don't think so. I don't think John Lynch is a Hall of Fame player. I never really did. I think John Lynch was a very popular player for a variety of reasons. He's a very likable player. He's a charismatic guy. He spoke well. People could relate to him. I didn't ever see him. I mean, look, like Brian Dawkins, for example. In my mind, there's no comparison between John Lynch and Brian Dawkins. And you look at the other safeties that are in the Hall of Fame, all like four of them that are in there.
Right.
John Lynch was never on that level. He was never Ronnie Lott. I mean, come on, right. Paul Krause, he never sniffed any of that.
Paul Krause.
Dawkins is the only guy. And Dawkins, in my opinion, was clearly the better of the two players. Right. I wouldn't put Lynch in there. I don't think
he
wasn't that good.
I think what hurts Lynch in his candidacy this year is Ed Reed's name.
Yeah, I hope so.
Because there's only five that can get, only five can get in. And you're sitting there saying, well, do we put Reed in? We put Lynch in? Like, Reed's, to me, such an obvious. I think that doesn't
for
help.
As rare as it is to get a safety in the Hall of Fame, when you put those two together, you don't deserve to weigh in on the topic if you think John Lynch belongs in there before Ed Reed. Plain and simple.
I'd ask you about Tom Flores, but we'll move on. All right, so... It's a great backup quarterback, though. All right, Neil, thank you so much. Appreciate your time, as always. And this was done for fun. Don't sweat Saturday when they make the announcements.
I always do. I'm always nerve-wracked with the results of the Hall of Fame, the most political process in sports. But, hey, I enjoy it. You know, they never put anybody in that doesn't belong in. It's a matter of time. But I will enjoy it, and thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Next half hour, football recruiting, letter of intent day, the late signing period will be a week from tomorrow. Penn State has 19 signed already from the early signing period. And then there's the late signing period to get to 25. Also doesn't close the door on transfers. You know, the transfer portal, to its credit, works both ways.
let's hope so.
Oh, it does, believe me. It does.
Yeah, you just don't want that to be a one-way street.
No, it depends on who it is.
Always.
Yeah. Depends on who it is. All right, let's get to the top of the hour, then our play-by-play call of the day. We'll follow that up with Ryan Snyder from Rivals.com and Blue White Illustrated. Today's show is brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.